Blog Talk Radio.
What's up?
Oh, not much, not much. We have a wonderful board of poetry. You know, just 2 hours to do it in. What do you think? Maybe. Maybe.
Well, a good chunk of it, anyway.
What's that, hon?
I said we'll do it. We'll get to a good chunk of it.
Yes, yes, yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, my ears must not be tuned in. But I hear the frog.
Yes, well, they're very active.
And then the southern frogs. I'm going to open up for the northern frogs real soon. So here we go. Hello, Laurent, and welcome to the party. I hope you brought the boys with you.
They may be in between choruses, but yes, they've been active tonight.
Well, we have these.
Yeah,
have
go,
the southern
there you
frogs.
Go.
And we have the northern frogs right now. So, you know, it's
going
to be tough.
Well, I prefer the southern fried because if they keep it up, I'm going to catch them and have some southern fried frog legs.
Oh.
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 Yeah, they tend to get large around the swamp.
Oh. I'm telling you. Perfect frog legs here. Tastes like chicken.
Yes. I've had frog legs, believe it or not. Yes, yes, yes. They work. They work. Everything's just behaves. Everything tastes like chicken. Yep. That's what everybody says about everything.
It does.
Like
it does, too. It really does. I think there's nothing to do
that. So, anyway, I don't know, fellas. We got lots of poetry, and I don't know. I'll probably be laughing and being an ass like I always am. Just telling the truth, everybody.
Correct.
Yes.
The mute button.
Rex,
don't you?
You want to put some money? You want to put some money down on whether or not Jane can go the night without muting? What do you say? You got a buck? I'll put a buck on it.
Wait a minute now. Rex knows I'm muted. He knows I'm muted. He knows it.
Well, you did make one night 55 minutes before you muted yourself.
The one night it was like 2 seconds into the show almost, and the other one was like almost 2 hours in, and I did it. Almost got it.
Gene, every time you mute tonight, you got to put a quarter in the mute jar.
Oh, there you go. There you go. Wow. And who's collecting when it's over?
Rex and I will flip for it. Rex and I will flip for that.
Every time I'm mute and I don't pick up, huh? Somebody's going to throw a quarter in a jar. There you go. Good thing I don't have to do that. I never even have a quarter, let alone have a jar.
Well, I'll keep track for you, trust me. Yay, you're getting off cheap.
See this? Yeah, so... I don't know. It's been hot and sticky here. We're supposed to have rain today, tomorrow, and Sunday. Bits and pieces of rain. Not big cold days of it, but, you know, scattered showers, I guess. We had a little bit of a thunderstorm.
What are you, the weather lady? Is this the weather lady or a postie show? What are we doing?
What would you rather hear about? Would you rather hear about my gout? What? You want weather or you want
oh, bitch about you got gout? I'm gout. Sorry about that.
You'd rather hear about the weather, right?
I don't have any gout.
I don't have gout.
I got no doubt you don't got gout.
Oh, God. He thinks he's rhyming, man. He's rhyming today. Oh, no. So, yeah, I don't know. There's just not a whole lot happening. Just the weather, and it's been quiet here. You know, my son and the boys were away Monday and Tuesday. They came back, and my son left for Kansas on Wednesday. You know, it was kind of quiet here with just my grandson and I. You know, we get along pretty good together. 2 peas in a pod.
I just went to a red light with a cop on my ass. How was that? Right to a red light.
That was poor plan.
Son of a gun, he noticed.
He startled me into it. Oh, God, there's a cop behind me. What was it one time? I forget. I have to remember. I remember going down the road. I had a bubblegum machine following me up the road. I was like,
you must be moving around because you're fading in and out.
I'm fading. I'm fading fast.
That's better. That's much better.
Don't get used to it. Anyway.
Okay.
So, Rex, is it hot and sticky there, too?
It was earlier. Then it rained for a little bit. And now it's kind of cool because there's more rain coming.
That's nice. We're supposed to be down to, like, 71 by like, 7 o'clock in the morning. And then we're going to start going back up.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, it's 78 right now.
Yeah. Moran, how about you? Is it hot and sticky there, too?
It was 90 today. It's going to be 92 tomorrow, and it's going to be 92 after that, and it's going to be 88, and then it's going to be 90.
Yeah.
And humid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
that's a good word. Yuck's a good
word. Well,
that's all right. The lady next door has a parrot that stands about 3 feet tall on her shoulder, I swear. He is louder, much louder than the frogs. But he screams in the daytime. The frogs do it at night.
There you go. I don't know. I was saying to Rex when I heard his frogs going on. But I like hearing that. I do. I find it calming or soothing or, I don't know, relaxing, you know, in many ways.
Rex has those southern frogs. They, you know, they
I know. You can hear the difference.
Brawl, I think.
You can hear the difference in them. It's funny. It's really funny. Yep. I remember I used to rent a house down in Florida. It used to be great, you know, because they have all the screened-in porches there, you know, the pools. And this one place we rented had all these tree frogs. I'm telling you, it was like something almost out of a horror flick. They were everywhere. They were up on the screens, you know. They were trying to get in the screens. Oh. And they made a little noise. But they weren't nothing like, you know, you would think. As many of them as there were, you would think it would be pretty noisy. But it was actually pretty calm. But it's all good. It's all good. I don't know, fellas. I guess I should get this party started because it's like 10 after 10. Actually, 11 after 10. So, I'm going to try and get some of these poems done. So let me grab this. The first one on the board tonight, Rex, I'm going to have you start us off with Delivering Little Boy by S. Sharp. So whenever you're ready.
All right. Delivering Little Boy by Scott Sharp. Enola Gay, big black letters emblazoned across cold steel of history. Boeing B-29 Super Fortress bomber, four-engine plane rumbling, shaking, and shuddering upon startup before calming and idle. Tinian Island, 2 a.m. Mama's boy. Colonel Paul Tibbetts head out the pilot's window, waves, carrying a heavy load, tired eyes lined like the tarmac on North Field of the Mariana Islands. Little boy loaded, 5 tons, flame and fury, targeting Hiroshima, power to bury a city like Pompeii, ashes of man-made anger, intentional fission, dividing night from day, past from present, time from eternity. Uranium-235, triggered nuclear fission, darkness like a solar eclipse, armed in flight, little boy, bird of prey, or Icarus, waxing poetic, disguised as genius, bringing the world to its knees, genuflect, surrendering, groveling amongst the smoldering ruins of war. And poem. And coming to you, Ron.
Oh, you are you?
Well, mm-hmm. this is one of those easy ones.
Right. Uranium-235 triggered nuclear fission, darkness like a solar eclipse, armed in flight, little boy, bird of prey, or Icarus. It's not that easy to take history and render it in any kind of poetics. I think he did a great job of this. It's long enough to tell the story. He sets the scene really nicely. He knows exactly what he's talking about with the Enola Gay and the B-29 Super Fortress. Paul Tibbetts, who's well known as the pilot of that plane, and when he talks about power to bury a city like Pompeii, ashes of man-made anger, it sent a little chill up my back, and I had to laugh because the next words, internal fission, and it kind of felt that way. This is a terrific piece.
Excellent. Thank you. And Gene, how about you?
You know, I think that Scott did a great job penning this piece. It was a nicely penned accounting of such a huge event in history, and it was really well done. You know, he didn't go crazy into detail, and you know, it was just very well put together. So, Scott, I want to thank you for sharing with us and a wonderful job tonight. Thanks, folks.
Absolutely. The title doesn't hold a whole lot by itself until you get to that opening line, Enola Gay. And all of a sudden, a little boy makes a whole lot of sense because the first two, they were called Fat Man and Little Boy, with all that secrecy that ran through the last couple of years of the war. And I do like that opening note, 2 a.m., Trinity Island, Mom is born. Colonel Paul Tibbetts, head out the pilot's window, waves, carrying a heavy load, tired eyes, blind like the tarmac on North Field of the Mariana Islands. And then next one, Little Boy Loaded, 5 tons of flaming fury. I did like that note you hit on, power to bury a city like Pompeii, ashes of man-made anger, except they didn't quite know how devastating it would be until they got a look at the city afterwards to see some of the victims flash fried on the wall with nothing left of them, as it were, when the after the bombing itself. And that he does hit that note of dividing night from day, that alludes to that notation from Oppenheimer, I have become death, the destroyer of worlds. And I like that, darkness like a solar eclipse. Armed in flight, little boy bird of prey, or Icarus. Waxing poetic, disguised as genius, bringing a world to its knees, literally and figuratively. As we got the whole learning curve in that one moment as Hiroshima went up. Nicely done, Scott. Thank you very much.
Absolutely.
All right, James.
Yeah. I hope. Well, I'm going to have you read the next one. And this is called Savoir Faire by Poetic Professor.
Savoir Faire. Within the present society, there are men of savoir vivre, and there are men of savoir faire. Do not mistake the meaning of one from the other, because to do so is to not understand their value and practicality. There are wise men of knowledge, and there are ignorant men of hauteur. There are plenty men of charm, and there are plenty men with no wit at all. Now the men of savoir faire are the daring and eccentric fellows of art, whilst the men of savoir vivre are the aspiring men of society. To know is to embody wisdom naturally, but to assume knowledge is to demonstrate pretension willingly. An intellectual knowledge that is used as a benefit and not a mere amusement. As for myself, I would say that I am a connoisseur and a man of refinement, but this does not imply savoir-faire. What does is the fact that I, from amongst the others, use my knowledge wisely and timely in my seduction. There are men that savor their status and their power, but there are others that require only the ingenuity of their intellect. Thus, a man could be courteous in his decorum, or he could insinuate prestige with his actions. As for myself, I do not need to impress nor impose my will, for I am a man of savoir-faire. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, what do you think?
I think this is a great piece by Frank. I really do. Trying to think of what I would and trying to carry forward. But there are plenty of men of charm, and there are plenty of men with no wit at all. Now the men of savoir-faire, with daring and eccentric fellows of art, plus the men of savoir-vivre, or aspiring men of society. To know is to embody wisdom naturally, but to assume knowledge is to demonstrate pretension willingly. I like that. I like how he ended this off too. Thus a man could be courteous in his decorum, or he could insinuate prestige with his actions. As for myself, I do not need to impress or impose my will, for I am a savoir-faire. I thought it was just really well put together piece. Honestly, he just really kind of put it out there very, very nonchalantly, actually. And I like that. So well done, Frank, and a great piece to share with us tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Julie. And Laurent, you got three. How about you?
Again, I enjoyed this one a great deal. And I like the Salvo Vive and the Salvo Faire. If you translate Salvo Faire precisely, it shows a capacity for actions that are polished, a kind of a sureness in social behavior. Salvo Vive, presumably someone who knows how to live, but are often the less desirable type, let's put it that way. And he jumps from the wise men of knowledge and the ignorant men of hauteur, or a highness, kind of a step above everyone else, if you will. And so he makes that distinction between men of charm as well and men with no wit at all. And he can say, besides that he is part of the group of savoir-faire, he has the social graces. The penultimate line really struck me. Thus, a man could be courteous in his decorum, or he could insinuate prestige in his actions. This is a very precisely worded, and it almost has tongue-in-cheek. I'm not sure if it does or not, but it is kind of a bemusement about the tone of this, which I enjoy. Great piece.
Absolutely. I did take this with a touch of a note of humor within it, because he bites on a couple of things. From where the explanation was savoir-faire and savoir-vivre is, the next line down kind of play with that. To know is to embody wisdom naturally, but to assume knowledge is to demonstrate pretension willingly, an intellectual knowledge that is used as a benefit and not a mere amusement. As for myself, I would say that I am a connoisseur and a man of refinement, but that does not imply savoir-faire. And then a couple more lines, but I did like the back end of this, because up in that middle section, he kind of hints and implies and alludes that maybe he's not, but maybe he is. And the reader has got to make a distinction between the two, because then he offers at the bottom end, as for myself, I do not need to impress nor impose my will, for I am a man of savoir-faire. So he has a little bit of fun playing with the reader. I like that note, too. All right, Gene, we're coming back up to you.
Thanks, everybody. And the next piece I'm going to select is called Feel Good by Sebastian Velma. I'm going to Feel Good. It was time when I was pressed. Don't know what to do. Can't plan in my day. Can't arrange my words in a simple way to tell anyone that I'm alone today. Somewhere I lost my ground. Don't know how to recover. Neither I can sleep nor I can remain awake. A bizarre state of mind that dragged me unknowingly near a stall of gifts and jewelry. But I picked up my small attaché and turned my face towards the gallery. The shining lights of LED pierced my mind suddenly, and I remembered her words instantly, once spoken casually. Don't worry, everything will become easy. You must not lose your identity. Always live for somebody to feel good internally. End quote.
Great reading. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you?
All right. I'm not that familiar with Devash Verma, but I enjoy what he says. A common complaint arises right at the beginning. It was time when I was a bit confused, a little depressed, didn't know what to do. Can't plan my day, can't arrange my words in a simple way. And I've got to say that I kind of felt that way all day long today. When you get kind of tied up in the world, and you can't sleep, nor can you remain awake, as he says, you're in that middle ground. He calls it a bizarre state of mind, dragged me on my way. There are words sometimes that people say that make a lot of sense. And if you can cling to your identity, as he says, you must not lose your identity, always live for somebody to feel good internally. You can't just lose yourself in yourself. There are other people, other things, other states of mind to get to. So you focus on one, and presumably you you maintain who you are and get through the tough times. Nice piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Noel. And Gene, you got to read. How about you?
You know, Rex, I was going to try and pull a fast one and read your comment on this piece from before. I thought maybe that would be fun, but I said, well, I better behave myself. I actually wrote down before that it was a nicely penned piece and it was well done. Somewhere I lost my ground. I don't know how to recover. Neither I can sleep nor I can remain awake. A bizarre state of mind that dragged me unknowingly near a stolen gifts and jewelry, but I picked up my small attaché and turned my face towards gallery. The shining lights of LED pierced my mind suddenly, and I remember the wood instantly. You know, what a story. You know, I think we can all relate with, like, kind of being in that fog state, you know, where we're, you know, we can't find a happy place. We can't find a space that suits us. You know, I kind of, you know, I see that to be what this is really about. You know, looking for something more. And, you know, somehow these words, don't worry, everything will become easy. Let's not lose your identity. Always live for somebody to feel good internally. But, you know, I guess that's the thing. You know, if we share kindness or happiness with someone, it's going to come back to us. Is what I'm gathering from those last three lines. But I thought it was a nice piece and wonderful job to Baptist, and appreciate you sharing with us. Nice work.
Nice. Yeah, right up to that line, neither I can sleep nor I can remain awake. Just on that note, to the a bit more of a confusion, but a fog-filled mind, someone lost in the moment, whether it's, it doesn't matter what it is, you're kind of in that middle ground. Nothing seems to make sense. But all of a sudden you find yourself somewhere, and all of a sudden something does make sense. The shining light of an LED pierced my mind suddenly, and I remembered her words instantly, once spoken casually. Don't worry, everything will become easy. There is that note of finding yourself in the moment, Judge. Almost like you needed to be at that particular place, that particular point in time, to lead you into that note of where you should be. There's a note of spirituality in this that he hits himself up with, you must not lose your identity. Always live with somebody to feel good internally, whether that's yourself or the one you love or the people you love, family. So the idea, everything comes as it does in its own good time, and all things are possible past the feeling of that foggy notion of being lost in life itself. So I enjoyed this. And thank you, Devasish.
Nice comment. Okay, Rex, that's going to bring me back to you. And this is called Fear, Part 21 of the Journey by Daniel DeShima.
Damn. Fear, Part 21 of the Journey by Daniel DeShima. To be looking death in the eye is sobering, energetic, and humanizing. And sometimes death is much more impersonal and just removes life as footprints in the sand. And the waves come under skies of peace. But when death stalks you, it is your mortal soul that is being devoured. A flower stepped on is crushed, but a flower eaten, and even the essence is destroyed. And in all creatures, desire is the most penetrative weapon, no matter what kind of desire it is. And so, just double a long spear's length away, the eye of a monster desires my death. If I only had a long spear, creatures consume the other creatures of the world for life. Mankind is a different story. I have spoken to holy men, and that's why the gods created carnivores, yet preached peace. Maybe if the possibility of peril weren't constant, life would not be as precious. Desperation demands two choices, pray or act. I married the two together and showed death. I drew claws from fingers curved, ready to strike. Fangs patiently appeared from my mouth, as a dragon from the fog, with just a distorted and menacing smile, and my eyes piercing, positioned, penetrating. Death embraces the weapon of fear from the foolish who deny its existence and the captive that succumbed to its cage. But when the victim is death reflects as a mirror, anything that is faced with itself will eventually succumb to what they are. I didn't move for a long time after the monster left, but when I did, I ran and from. Jean, what do you think?
Wow. It's a pretty cool piece. You know, I like how he started this out to be looking death in the eye is sobering, energetic, and dehumanizing. And sometimes death is much more impersonal and just removes life as footprints in the sand and the waves come under skies of peace. I thought that was just a wonderful way to bring it, to start this piece out and to bring the reader into it. And then the further down it went, I was like, okay. You know, I love this about, I have spoken to holy men and asked why the gods created carnivores, yet preach peace. Maybe if the possibility of peril weren't constant, life would not be so be as precious. Desperation demands two choices, pray or act. Yeah, this is a neat piece, very much so. I like the, you know, I like some more of it down here near the end too, but I'm not going to keep on going because, you know, otherwise you'll be saying, "Shut up, I got time." But I really do. I think this is just a wonderful write by Dan, and yeah, I like the way he writes. He has a different way of looking at things. In my view, you know, what I see him write is just a little different than what I would have maybe thought of myself, and I like that. I like it very much. You know. So excellent job, Dan, and thank you so much for sharing this with us. I like to see you tonight. Well done.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, I believe this is the finest work of his that I've read. I haven't read all of it by any stretch, but I was completely mesmerized by the storytelling in this. The phrasing was gripping. There were so many good lines to quote. It kind of reminds me of the Medusa story. Her gaze reflected back onto her and her demise. Death embraces the weapon of fear from the foolish who deny its existence and the captured that succumbs to its cage. But when the victim to death reflects as a mirror, anything that is faced with itself will eventually succumb to what they are. I don't know. I don't want to get hyperbolic, and I tend to run out of superlatives, but this piece deserves it all.
Nice. I like that. Fear, part 21 of the journey. I'm going to go with the idea of life and what we learn within life. I like that opening stanza, the thought of to be looking death in the eye is sobering, energetic, and humanizing, and sometimes death is much more impersonal and just removes life as footprints in the sand. Now, I like that. I like that. It hits on the idea of understanding the idea of death itself and coming to terms with it, because you look at this and he offers up that note of you can ponder on the thought of death and how that fear walks with you always, and you never tread in a direction that you might want to, because that fear holds true. Because he hits on that idea. But when death stalks you, it is your mortal soul that is to be devoured. There's an ease of phrase, do not sin, do this, that, and the other thing. But when you're afraid of death, you walk around always afraid and fear, and then you actually are committing a sin because you're not living, which is it's kind of a nice thought within in that angle. And the idea of the stare down, so to speak, is that look from deep within as you stare down the face of death, knowing that one day it will take you, but today is not that day. And the idea of being as mean, brutal, and nasty with the I grew claws and fingers curved, ready to strike, fangs patiently appeared from my mouth as a dragon from the fog, with just a distorted and menacing smile, and my eyes piercing, positioned, penetrating. And they denote Death embraces that weapon of fear from the foolish who deny its existence and the captured that succumbs to its cage. So it's all about that position in life, that age you come to terms with the angle of your own mortality. Because we rage through our 20s into our 30s, nothing's going to touch us. Because we don't believe in death, so to speak. But as you get older, you understand the concept, and some tend to walk around with it as a bag strapped to their back, ever appeared of meeting death, even though, you know what, it's going to take you one day, so why don't you enjoy the life instead of pining away from it and hiding? So,
yeah, but, you know, this is sold with a certain amount of bravado, isn't it?
Yes, you've got to have that. Otherwise, death wins. If you let death win in the moment, then you always have that fear.
That is true, but there's so many sides to the story that you can take one point of view, but you could just as easily take another. Like, there's nothing you can do about this baby.
True, but he finishes out with that note. After standing his ground and holding true to himself, he still ran, still had that note of fear.
Right.
He hasn't fully gotten over it, which is a nice touch. He understands, but he hasn't fully made that jump, and I like that thought.
Yeah, you can't yield to it, you're right.
All right, Jane, we're coming up. That's it to you.
Okay, kid. Let me check the – just check in.
Wow. She's past the half-hour mark. No mutes.
That's right.
Don't jinx her.
Hey, I got money on this, right?
Never bet on me. That's one thing for sure. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Union, and it's by Asama Chiba. So I'm going to go ahead and read that one. Union. Union without love is either the ranting of a deaf mute, and joy, unembittered by the deep, flowing passions of the sea, is as an arid string of lute, for the notes seized by nothing more than a handful of rust are as flattering to the soul as a palmful of dust. For the truth, free from mocking bile, my love is a garden undefiled. Union with love is a thousand nights of journeying together. Love is a travel in the desert of life, seeking one another's essence, ascending the stages of Mahabha, following the trail of caravans on exoteric paths in pursuit of the gleaming light without limit or end. Taste the wine of the beloved embrace, endowed with spiritual attributes. And this was a collab.
Great.
With Asama Chiba, Paul and Menstrual. So I just want to make sure I say that.
I see that.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And Laurent, what do you think?
I think it's an absolutely exquisite description of love. I've read a lot of descriptions of love, but when she says love is a travel in the desert of life, seeking one another's essence, ascending the stages of Mojave, following the trail of caravans on exotic paths, in the pursuit of the gleaming light without limit or end, it's a unique metaphor, one I have not heard before, one that is well developed in terms of who she is and where she lives, and it really has a lot of the Arabian tone to it. Well, with Mohammed, with caravans, exotic paths, the gleaming light, all of that, and then the desert as the place. It really smacks of an area of the world where there's a great deal of mysticism and romance, and they look at love in almost in a different way, both brutally and exquisitely tenderly at the same time. It's a very strange thing, but this is an excellent piece.
Excellent. Thank you, Ron. June, how about you?
You know, I really like this piece. I liked the two sides of it, union with love and union without. You know, union without love is a ranting of a deaf mute and joy unembittered by the deep flowing passions of the sea. You know, wow. Like, you know, that's a hell of a description. Because really, what for? Why? why. If you don't care about each other, if you don't have that love between you, then really, what's it worth? You know, I mean, I'm just saying, that's the way I see it. And then union with love is a thousand nights of journeying together. Love is a travel in the desert of life, seeking one another's essence, ascending to the stages of the habit. You know, I just think it's just a wonderful mirroring, not really mirroring, comparison of the two. And I think it was really both well written. The first half of this was written by Colin Minster, and I think he did a fabulous job with that. And I think Thomas was very tender in words. And I think that also reflects the differences in the two. I think it was just beautifully written and put together by the two of them. So wonderful job. And thank you, Osama, so much for allowing us to read this tonight. And you too, fall in ministry. Absolutely.
This walk, they both hit on the same angle, but on different notes, because the finishing, the last five lines of the opening stanza for Fallen Minstrel were, for the notes teased by nothing more than a handful of lust are as flattering to the soul as a palm full of dust. For the truth free from mocking bile, my love is a garden undefiled. And then it rolls into a psalmist, union with love, and you get that right off the bat, a thousand nights of journeying together. You get that note to a 1001 Arabian Nights, and she dips into that travel in the desert, the seeking of another's essence, trail of caravans, the esoteric path in pursuit of the gleaming light without limit or end, which is a nice touch there, and the finality in that those last two lines, which kind of walk along with the finishing two lines of the minstrel's opening stanzas. Taste the wine that beloved's embrace, endowed with spiritual attributes. So you want that, my love is a garden undefiled, but you still need the spirituality to help walk within that that true essence of shared intimacy and life together. Wonderful job, you two. Thank you very much.
Okay. Now, Laurent, I have the next piece for you. And this is Out of the Hollow Passing, to Old Euphoria by Ben Hart.
Out of the Hollow Passing Through Old Euphoria. Vanish. Can't we disappear the moment? Please, all I'm asking for is that you'll hold me. Get to kill something without becoming soulless, because most things we just phoned in. And now, we can't do it all over again. Why did we think we'd ever see them around, all the friends that left? And ever since, we felt rather lonely. Why couldn't we get roped in the world they all seem to love so much? Or at bare minimum, seem to understand, which to us always just seemed a little bit out of focus. And then another now, we are loving aloud. Hold you close when the snow is falling down. Fear not the cold, it won't take you away. We may not grow old today, but I promise in these arms, you'll always be safe. And then another now, every time they frown out, stars unbound, you go to war against the clouds to stand up for faraway strangers who remind us of hope when the night becomes dangerous. Yes, for the little apocalypses adrift, we'll stand our ground. And then another now, we're still trying not to make a sound because they'll find us otherwise, the dreamers on the ground and the passerby on the owl. They get so afraid of the wolf's howl, as though we'd ever bare our teeth to anyone we meet upon the town. Yeah, fear's burning it all down. And in another now, the distance stares right back at the parts of my eyes, unshrouded, weighing everything I came by on my own against everything I stole. And it's saying, funny, isn't it, how all color is created in a black hole, and something is only ever as whole as you choose to perceive it. So sometimes, when casting off the soul, we look up into the universe, and to think to see nothing at all, but in another now, just as worth it, infinity seems rather small. Juliet, the storm is gone, and summer once more takes hold, timber streets, wet and cold, tender in absence of the sun. Oh, where did you run, violent July? This wasn't named for Juliet, but I like that lie. So I live by it. And some men have wandered home without knowing where to go. So why not just turn around and shake with me the ground? You never held back before, so why not once more? When I needed it most to escape my tungsten woes, oh, summer storm, you came without warning and took from us the warmth and left it for tomorrow morning. Well, I needed it now to burn me down, build me up again, embers in the ashes that will never end, the expanse, a thousand worlds in empty, giving hands. And you, my love, to the queen of all women, become one, to walk among the beautiful nowhere of this world and not stand out, feel so separated, exasperated or decimated, but emancipated without hesitation. Don't proclaim, just scream, because I'm a goddamned artist. And if I cannot feel the beauty of waking, how can I know if I've made it out of this dysphoric dream? Yeah, I want to lose myself in it, find myself again. And I know that that sounds a lot like dying, but I promise you, it's more than that. Because beauty is something envisioned by misery's marionettes. And I no longer believe in strings, because if I want a drink, I'll drink. So what's the point of giving in to the sickness? Because if I want to win, I'll find myself in David and take one back for gentle giants like Goliath. And if you think that you could ever be king, step into the fucking ring, and I'll give you starry nights that even dear Vincent couldn't fucking imagine. I will fight for a time where they'll call Ben Hart by his rightful name, the beautiful bastard, Jedi Knight, that saw the Force not as something to master, but to apply, furthering the light. Something we don't know, and you must know I love you. A love unlike anything I've ever known. But if you didn't want me to love her even beyond, why did you make her so much more? And something I don't often admit, there are times when I feel like God. But what he was supposed to be, not some benign overseer, but just someone there with me. Another human being, with the exception that they don't have to breathe or raise their heads in search of freedom among the stars he cannot see. I hope he isn't lonely. The dream, hope not for my sake, if this is the dream and death its maker. Let me never wake her, that being of creation, breathing selflessly, a sense of freedom that at least the beautiful get to believe in. Wait not for my name to be struck from shore by tide. Beloved low, acreless breakers, run now, brother, to a kinder dawn, if the time is what you make of it. Because I fear, twice blinded, you'll be too far away to retell the age-old tale to those in waiting of a distant daybreak, a weightless day, and save me a seat on your favorite hill. Outside gates, the thought would be grander, and we'll laugh about it then. All we ever failed to understand. And
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. Gene, you want to kick us off?
Well, you know, Ben's stuff has always ruffled me because he's got so much going on in there. You know, every vignette. And his vignettes are all so wonderfully written. But it's just so much for me to pull together. Where's the one I was looking at? Number four, become one. To walk among the beautiful nowhere of this world and not stand out, feel so separated, exasperated or decimated, but emancipated without hesitation. Don't proclaim, just scream, because I'm a goddamned artist. And if I cannot feel the beauty of waking, how can I know if I've made it out of this euphoric dream? You know, that's just one section, and I could probably pull one out of every vignette and, you know, say something that, you know, how much it was, or how well written it was, or how good it was, or how, you know, in some cases, how profound it was. You know, he's a great writer, and he just has just a wonderful way of telling his story, his truth, and I think that's pretty wonderful, you know. Take them all together. I mean, he could actually take each one of these vignettes and make one poem out of it. It wouldn't, it, you know, it wouldn't have to have six parts to it. He could just make them, you know, into six poems, you know, that, you know, feed into the next. And I think it's pretty wonderful. Yeah. So great job, Bennett. I really appreciate the share. And I wish I could, like, make a more, a comment that, that more or less encompass everything, but I can't do it. I just can't do it. So that's it for me.
All right, thank you, Gene. And Laurent, you got to read it. Nice lengthy piece too. What do you think?
Yeah. Lord, that's a loaded question at this point. It speaks of disappointment. It speaks of ostracization. It speaks of lost friendship. It delves very, very deeply into things that normally aren't discussed. I mean, all that easily. He takes a look at the other, another now, possibilities of different things happening to them in different places, and would things be different? Of course they'd be different, and we would realize things that we didn't realize before. He speaks of Juliet, and was she named, was July named for Juliet? He says Violent July. Does that describe Juliet or not? I think he speaks of never being able to go home again, and not to yield to what is happening, but to, I mean, if you're going to burn down, you're going to be built back up again. The embers and the ashes. He speaks of a thousand worlds and empty giving hands, and how his love is the queen of all of them. He talks about becoming one with the beautiful nowhere of this world. What is the beautiful nowhere? It's an abstract place where everything is perfect, where we would love to go, isn't it? At least that's what it reminds me of me. And it's a place where you would not stand out, but be absorbed into the whole. But you would expect to be recognized for who you are, in a way that maybe you're not otherwise. And it goes on to speak of dreams, and I mean, it is complex and seemingly disparate, yet he manages to bring everything together because there are common recognitions of our humanity all the way through this from top to bottom. It's such a complex piece that to give it faint praise with a vague comment on after a cold reading. It's totally unfair to the piece, so you can bet I'll be reading this again.
Excellent. Thank you. You're right. This does hit on heavy notes of, well, there's that love in here. There's some pain, hurt, even depression walks its note in this. But I think what the biggest standout in this is the, because he hits on the sort of the Vincent, but I'll paint you that those starry nights like you've never seen, like Vincent's never seen. That was a nice touch. Everything he's hit in here, even that where he inserts himself, I will fight for a time where they'll call Ben Hart by his rightful name, the beautiful bastard, Jedi Knight, that saw the Force not as something to master, but to apply, furthering the light. And then he rolls into something we don't know, and then the dream. But I think the biggest thing that walks within this each and every vignette is the amount of passion poured into it. So even with the thoughts of the depression, pain, hurt, love, and all the other exasperating details that that can be poured forth on a soul, the idea of passion comes singing through this to the point where you understand I am an artist. And that angle of being seen and not seen, unwanted, barely delineated, so to speak, but wanting to walk within that world where one is unfettered, but one is unadjudicated, so to speak, to be free and in that realm of sanctity that you find in your own mind, and you can put down the paper, put down the canvas, but the whole thing walks with a heavy, passionate note which sings on its own. Well done, Ben. All right, Gene, we're coming up back to you.
Don't keep looking. Well, next piece I'm going to put up is called Surprise Sights by A.R. Mundell. A nice comment there, Nuno. Nuno said, Ben Hart is one of the most underrated poets on here. He deserves more tracks. It's kind of hard to get. So here we go. Surprise Sights by A.R. Mundell. The best adventures are the ones you don't expect to happen. They sneak up on you in the tall grasses of your plans and bring you to sights you never expected to see. Like clearings and forested plains, those images stay with you, etched into the sandbanks around your eyes, long after those planned sights are blown away by life's gentle breeze. End quote.
Great read, Gene. Thank you very much. I like the ease this comes across, the note to the best adventures are the ones you don't expect to happen. That little freeform moment where the surprise takes you by surprise and offers you something that even if you had planned for it, you couldn't have expected the same outcome because the surprise gives you that blush of beauty in the moment, which even on best laid plans always goes awry. So nicely done, Amy. Thank you. And Ron, how about you?
I think the element of the unexpected is absolutely underrated in life in general. The discovered pleasures, the unplanned ones, are moments of delight. I see these videos where these guys disguise themselves, you know, like a bush or a tree or something, and they plant themselves in the street. And as passersby come towards you, of course, they jump out, scare them to death, but they're laughing and they're joking and they go over to breathing, they can't believe it, and it's a moment of pleasure. Well, in that same way, when something unexpected happens, it's the immediacy of the moment without planning. It's the discovery, the surprise, the delight. And she communicates that so beautifully.
You're right. I've seen those videos, too. They're a howl. And the people howl after the scare, too. They find the surprise just as illuminating and funny afterwards. So it is great fun all the way around. Gene, you got to read this. How about you?
You know, I thought this was just a nice piece. I love the imagery in it and the thought. You know, and I have to agree, the best adventures are the ones you don't expect to happen. This is true. Although I hate surprises. I do. They unnerve me a little bit. I don't know why. But, I love her her thoughts here. Like clearings in forested plains, those images stay with you, etched into the sandbanks around your eyes long after those planned sights I'm blown away by Life's gentle breeze. Life's breeze is not always gentle. I want to add that to the mix. But I think Amy did a fabulous job with her wording here. You know, just really, really well done. Yes, so excellent job, Amy, and thank you so much for sharing with us. As always, we love having your work. Always, always. Yeah. I guess I have to find another for somebody. Oh, you know what?
Okay, the evening is half over, and she is maintaining her record of no mutes. I love it.
Yeah. I'm going to cost you a dollar.
Oh, man. Oh, man. That's
old. Oh, my God. Okay. Next piece I'm going to put up is by Arcana Amore, and it's called Grieving Ghosts. And I have an audio for that. Oh, man.
Follow us into the seeping shadows. We have such sights to show your soul, where drowning dreams decay in demise, from forsaken phantoms that haunt the ether. As mist, they rise in viscous vapors, in a derelict realm of forgotten faith. Their quintessence wails like howling wind, piercing the quietude of somber silence. They endlessly roam in search of deliverance through infinite poles of deepest darkness, beneath brooding skies as black as pitch, swallowing spirits trapped for eternity. An eerie rumble beckons the sleeping storm, whose speechless disdain rains despair, cascading in corridors of barren wilderness, across deserted ruins of devastation. Light there flickers in faded whispers, like a dying candle with wick that's spent. In swirling sighs echo the emptiness, desolation dominates this desperate domain. Sea torrents of torment trickle through time, each melancholy moment of languorous lament, forever flowing through passages of penitence, manifesting misery to morosely moaned melodies. Torrid temptations tremble with tangible turpitude, that blinded their paths as they frantically fell, losing sight of the light that ascended above, to descend the depths of immortal night. Do you see it now, this vacuous void that lies in wait to embrace regret, capturing all those who acquiesce asunder, to dwell this hell as grieving ghosts?
great read on Canada. Thank you for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. All right, Laurent, what do you think?
Do you see it now, this vacuous void that lies in wait and embrace regret, capturing all those acquiesce asunder, as well as hell as grieving ghosts? I could have chosen any stanza to reflect on the melancholy genius of this poem, whose spirits are draped in the misery and morose shadows of a lightless existence. And any stanza would probably have served, but this one had something about those last two lines, capturing all those who acquiesce asunder to dwell this hell as grieving ghosts. Such a note of finality that you can't overcome. It was a pretty gripping piece.
Thank you, Laurent. Jean, how about you?
Well, you know, I heard this 2 days ago, and I thought it was absolutely wonderful. You know, the alliteration throughout this entire piece was just incredible. Sometimes alliteration is like too heavy, but in Arcanus' piece, his pieces, there's a lot of it, but it doesn't like slap you in the face. I don't know how else to say that. It's just not as I don't know what the right word is for it, but sometimes it's just too much. And this never seems to be that way. It always just flows and is just, I don't know, it's just so well done. And I love his audio, just because they are, he's always well performed pieces from him. But I grabbed these two stanzas and I see torrents of torment trickle through time, each melancholy moment and languorous and mixed. Forever flowing through passages of tension, manifesting misery, morosely moaning notes. I don't know. I just think that it just does such a wonderful job. And I took the stanza after that as well, but I'm not gonna read that. But just a great job, Arcana, and thank you so much for putting it on the board for tonight. I appreciate it. As always, great job.
Yeah, I like the background music and the pacing you put into this. It matched the music. And even as the piano rose in that the end of that second stanza, he rose a little bit in voice too, and then piercing the quiet through the somber silence, it fell off and then walked itself back into the slow pace that it had. But you're right, this sparkles with alliteration, but the words are always chosen to match each other, so they don't, one doesn't overset the other, because he does he does little dips with two, and then you might not see another one, and you get two more, and then you get the offset ones that hit from the back line, which roll right back to the first line of the stanza, and then you get the whole line, which run in that note. Well, we got one. Desolation dominates this desperate domain. Each word holds itself true to the next without being overbearing in its stature, yeah. So it all hits on the very same note. And in swirling sighs that echo the emptiness, everything hits on, so you've got languorous lament, and then manifesting misery, some morosely moaned melodies. That all rings true, yet it's not heavy. When you get into alliteration, you tend to use words that don't fit in as well as they should, because you're looking to make it sparkle, and then you kind of over-endow it with alliteration and kind of spoils it. This does not. The fact that he read it a little extra slower to get the desolation, the grim, the ghostly tones of the piece worked itself that way well, too. This would have worked as a Vincent Price piece with voice. So I like that, too. Nice, Arcana. Thank you very much.
Well,
all right, Dean.
For my next magic trick, I'm going to put up this piece by someone who's not a member of LNP. It kind of was suggested to me. We got permission to it. And this is called The Straw by Asiya Mohammed Hanif. I hope. Not, I'm sorry if I must have been. Distress. Are my eyes red sea and my thoughts burning volcanoes? oh, what a disgrace, you villain. And so I devour his fables and find his fantasy, yet to discover the truth about me. What am I, if not a disarrayed bundle of emotion and thoughts? And oh, how she must suffer, they think. Battles occur in my head as I wait for the strike of an epiphany. The calmness of the spring is what I look for in my mind that is still there. Away from the consuming monstrosity that is the red, I wallow in the comfort of silence I hid, only to find that what is expected of me is of contrast. And so.
Great, Regine. Thank you very much. What do you think, Rob?
I think you're going first.
Oh, okay. No problem. All right. She goes with distraught, so I'm going to work off that angle. I like the opening angle. On my eyes, the Red Sea, and my thoughts burning volcanoes. Oh, what a disgrace, he bellows. And so I devour in fables and finest fantasy. That walks a decisive title, and those opening lines kind of walk on the note of something deeply personal, the idea of maybe being ridden hard, so to speak. It might pertain to family. It might pertain to a boyfriend. The distraught angle hits on the emotion that's tied within, so that might mean there's pain involved or a loss or just an undetermined venue as to how to project oneself. What I am is not a disarrayed bundle of emotion and thought. And, oh, how she must suffer. They think not. Battles occur in my head as I wait for the strike of an epiphany. And it's on that, the idea of a got a lot going on inside the head, waiting for that thought to open up the mind to a further note of what might or might not be going on. This might all just walk to the sort of to the point in life where something is going on that she can't handle, or not handle, so to speak, but she's having difficulty in adjusting to. Something is got a bite within her mind. And the thought on the back end of this, the calmness of spring is what I look for in my mind that is so vast. Again, that thought, vast, away from the consuming monstrosity that is dread. So fear walks into this. To wallow in the comfort of silence I had, only to find that what is expected of me is of contrast. So it might be the argumentative tone within one's own mind. I should be like this. No, you shouldn't. The back and forth notes looking for that epiphany, maybe even the angle of the argument that occurs inside the head to find common ground so they can meet somewhere in the middle. I like that tone. And, Gene, you got to read it. How about you?
Well, you know, I think I'm just going to hit this, you know, dead on. You know, this piece to me speaks of verbal abuse, someone being browbeaten, and you know, and what I had to say was always hold true to yourself. Never allow anyone to beat you down. Thine self be true. If it stays strong, and it was a well penned, because that's what I got from this all the way through. That the distraught was coming from the others that were talking her down, or saying she wasn't good enough, or what a disgrace you are, and what have you. And, you know, we can't let that define us. We have to really be strong in who we are. And that's not always easy. You know, but that's what I say about it. So I want to thank Luke J.R. He's the one who brought this piece to me. And I want to thank Afia for allowing us to read it. It's just a very well done piece. So thank you.
Nice. And Laurent, how about you?
Well, Jane hit the nail right on the head. Mrs. Summon, who is being browbeaten, I'm going to assume it's a husband. Oh, what a disgrace, he bellows. Now, if we understand where she lives and the kind of society she lives in, women are basically at the behest, the beck and call of men. They're in charge. Are my eyes a red sea and my thoughts burning volcanoes? Why would eyes be red? If you're crying constantly, perhaps debauched, is it a metaphor for the Red Sea from the Bible in area of the world? And she doesn't know who she are. She has yet to discover the truth about me. What am I if not a disarrayed bundle of emotion and thoughts? And isn't that exactly the way a lot of men consider women to be? And oh, how she must suffer. These are her friends, the people around her, the neighbors, the neighborhood who are aware of the situation that she finds herself in. And her mind is vast. And somewhere in that vastness is that calmness that she needs to be away from the consuming monstrosity that is dread, as she writes, which is something she lives with day in, day out, to wallow in the comfort of silence. She doesn't need to hear his voice. And then, of course, that last line is kind of a little bit of a twist. Great piece.
Nice. Thank you, Laurent. Jean, we're coming back to see you.
Okie doke. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is by Titus Llewellyn, and it's called A Classic Love Story. So, I have an audio for it.
A Classic Love Story. While the most memorable day is treasured, your acceptance years ago 'twas after then. 2 days you'll remember, both are measured between the first and last time my eyes open and tales did reach the locations in your lands. As the priceless leisures each did love survey, paradise, the pride of place, now hand in hand, will suggest the suitability of our souls at play. Your existence truly keeps me alive and well. I find you inherit the auspice of the occasion. My first being keen and yours my secret well, about whether or not it ought to be amazing. Distance between letting go or not has expired. A time it was needed to explore, to stir faith. Since God is born from you, it's most admired to feel his love through you to keep our safe.
Great read, Titus. Thank you for the SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. Jean, how about you? What do you think?
I knew you were coming here. You know, I like this piece. I like how he started it out. Well, the most memorable day is treasured. Your acceptance years ago was after then. 2 days you'll remember, both are measured between the first and last time my eyes opened. I thought that was just a lovely way to start this out. And then, you know, your existence truly keeps me alive and well. I find you inherit the office of the occasion. My first being seen and yours my secret. Well, about whether or not it ought to be amazing. To me, this strikes me as like an anniversary piece, and I could be way off on that. But I think it was just well written, and I thought it was just it was a nice love story. You know, it wasn't a bunch of frills and what have you and all this. It was just well put. It had a nice 2 feet on the floor kind of feel to me. Of course, nothing Titus ever writes is 2 feet on the floor, because the way he writes and the language that he uses is always a little bit above that. But I think that it's just, like reality-based, and you can feel that. And I think that's very nice. So excellent job, Titus, and thanks for sharing.
Thank you, Jean. And Laurent, how about you?
Sitting here in awe of Titus, as usual. It happens every time I read one of his poems. Well, the most memorable day is treasured. And I guess that's what Jean took as kind of an anniversary, and I've got to agree with her. Your acceptance years ago, after she said, yes, I will marry you, it was after that. And it was after that fact, 2 days. You remember, both are measured between the first and last time I was open, the first time I saw you. The last time my eyes will open before they close, presumably for death. The last stanza is intriguing. The time it was needed to explore to serve faith. All right, they had to serve God, but since God comes from you, it's most admired. Feel his love through you to keep our safe. In other words, love felt through God's hands will keep our love safe. So I beautifully worded. I absolutely agree that this is probably an anniversary love poem. Beautifully done.
Right. I can walk that way too. It does have a nice old world feel to it. And I like that second stanza. And tales did reach the locations in your land beyond as the priceless legends each did love survey. Paradise, the pride of place, now hand in hand, will suggest the suitability of the souls at play. I like, again, alliteration, but not heavy-handed. It fits, each word fits in place the way it should without overreaching on the next, but still holds itself well within that stanza itself and offers up the thoughts that go with it. And I did like the back end of this, the thought of faith that walks within it as well, and seeing that feeling and seeing that faith in the love through her is quite a note as well. Well done, Titus. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Back to you, Gene.
Okay. And this piece is called Fill in the Blanks by Hope Soul. It isn't worth the time tapping away at a keyboard, looking up meanings of words, finding obscure colors, scents, and places. Strap a saddle on the metaphor and corral fleeting emotions. That one's that they burn, scarring a deep at range, where my full bottom sits as I type away, way past the hours that a woman should, as myself should be awake. Pressing the space bar to add cursive to my lines, making sex take the shape of stanzas. I find no point in it at all anymore. Still can't make you see when I'm trying to speak out of all this art. Smoke my words, wrap hands on the thighs of poetry, find yourself in a better state than a woman penning the thing. Drink my lines and get drunk, make yourself flush. Blame it all on the Hispanic woman you will never meet. Take the batter and spoon, feed yourself. Flush your gums with grave thought. Tuck yourself in next to insomnia as I type these last two words. Fuck it. And so.
Nice touch of emphasis on those last two words.
We had to have them. It was meant to be.
I know. Laurent, what do you think about this?
I think this is very frustrated by not being very well understood, I've got a feeling. Our poet's such odd people that she could say, I feel no point in it at all anymore. Still can't make you see when I'm trying to speak out of all this art. What's the point? And then she just creates the most, well, all the way through here, the strap a saddle on metaphor for our fleeting emotions, to me was wonderful. But this one, smoke my words, wrap hands in the thighs of poetry, find yourself in a better state than the woman who's penning this ink. In other words, get more out of me than I actually am. Drink my lines and get drunk. Make yourself blush. How wonderful this is in the telling. She's such a free spirit in what she expresses. And how she expresses it, it really is a delight. I'm not sure about the words, fuck it, because this might be personal, and I don't want her to feel that way. She's an awesome writer.
Excellent. Thank you, Rob. And Dean, how about you?
You know, I think it was a really well done piece. I love her wording throughout. Some of the lines are just, you know, fabulous. She really makes you, you know, sit up and take notice of what you're reading all the way through. Although I shouldn't say that because I'm sure I stumbled a few times. But I think that, you know, you get frustrated. You become, depressed when things aren't going the way that you want them to go or aren't moving as fast as you want them to move, you know, or sometimes it just stops. Things just stop. And it's frustrating trying to keep it moving or get it moving again. It all depends on the situation. But I think the last two words really do work because after a while, if you're fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting and fighting, sometimes you have to say, fuck it. Let it just happen. You know, so there's two ways of looking at it. Sometimes it's like throw up your arms and say, who cares? But other times it's just like, this is going to sound terrible, but, you know, that fuck it is another way of saying let go and let God. You know, I can't fight this anymore. Let it just happen. Sometimes that's really what that means. And I think that's how I knew it needed an emphasis. Because you're going through here, you can feel the frustration. And, you know, God knows, I say it loud and proud when I mean it, you know. I have to say, you know. But Hope, I think that this was just really well done. It kind of goes hand in hand with the piece I read from her on our last show. It was a similar piece, and it had the same kind of vibe going on. And I believe that the last two words of this were the title of the other. I do. But hang in there, Hope. Don't lose the faith. Hang on to the hope. We'll all be okay.
I like that, Jane. I think the depression does walk in this a bit, but it also she hits on the idea of insomnia and way past the hour a woman such as myself should be awake. So I think that's walking into it as well. The thought of wanting to and needing to because she can't sleep. So the idea is I'll type something out. Usually, like, you read a book, you kind of fall asleep going with it, but you got thoughts rolling in your head, so you try wrapping them down. That way you also help yourself, a way of counting sheep, so to speak. I like that second note there, strap a saddle on a metaphor and corral fleeting emotions. The ones that stay burn, charring a deep-set ring where my full bottom sits as I type away. And I like the humor with that, where my full bottom sits. It's a sense of kind of a self-flagellating note in the moment, but it offers a bit of humor. Pressing the space bar to add cursive to my lines, making sex take the shape of stanzas. I find no point in it all anymore. Still can't make you see what I'm trying to speak in of all this art. So there is a little bit of a disconnect there. Some metaphors and the angle of thought she's offering up. Some are not understanding or maybe not looking deep enough into the voice being offered. But I did, the back end of this is lovely. Smoke my words, wrap hands on the thighs of poetry, find yourself in a better state than the woman who's painting this ink. It's almost that note of go find yourself something better. Drink my lines and get drunk, make yourself blush, blame it all on a Hispanic woman you will never meet. Take the batter and spoon, feed yourself, floss your gums with grave thoughts, tuck yourself in next to insomnia as I type these last two words. That she hits on that note of insomnia. It kind of hits on the idea of taking a swipe at maybe someone who's given her a little bit of shit, and it's a quiet note to, you know what? Come on. Think you can do better than this, so to speak? And the idea of fuck it is, hey, that's how it feels right now. Fuck it. I'm a little angry, a little miffed, and I got to let it all out. Put it to page. Nicely done, Hope. Thank you very much.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Jean, we're coming back to you.
Okay, I think I'm going to come to you with this one. It's called Wonderlust Wellson by Luke J.R. So whatever you want.
All right. Wanderlust, Whale Fin by Luke J.R. Wanderlust, Whale Fin, leaping through the pastel oils of paintings, through a museum, masons, metaphoric waitings, diving through masterpieces, reaching new heights. Depthful diving, devoted dolphin dives deeper. Depth, pastelic shimmers of glittering sandy dreamers, below the pastelic skies of blue, why? cautious cannonman held by his well-thin hands, where he stood with magnificent monumental morph within the peculiar painting, Diving Dolphin ever were through. Pastelic painting, masterpiece had given birth. It's just a whale on a pastel painting. End quote. And Dean, what about you? Let's start there.
I knew you were going to come to me. I just knew it. I think this is just a great piece, but it's well done, as always. He has an intriguing way of writing. And he's another one who has great use of alliteration. Cautious cameraman held by his well-thin hands, where he stood with magnificent monumental morph within the peculiar painting, Vine Dolphin Everwood, the pastelic painting, masterpiece, had given birth. It's just a whale on a pastel painting. Intriguing, it really was. It says down here, museums are often full of beautiful paintings. That's it. We can all see differently to each other. I've always felt like these masterpieces go back from their items all themselves. So, I mean, it's just, it's a creative right here, very much so. And I kind of like his take on that through the museum and the image. And, you know, he kind of brought it out and made it a whole different feel. There was more depth to it. So I think it was very well done. Thank you, as well. Excellent piece.
Nice. Thank you, Gene. And Ron, mm-hmm. How about you?
Well, on the one hand, we have the dolphin leaping from masterpiece to masterpiece as a perfect metaphor for moving through the world of art, which I can understand. However, when I've been in a museum and paused to look at a magnificent work of art, now, many of these are small, granted. Some are just enormous. The scale is kind of mind-boggling. You know, 10 by 20 by whatever, and some even larger. And you stand in awe of a magnificence like this. And then, for me, I'm kind of frozen to that image. And you can stand and study something like that for many minutes. So I'll be a passive dolphin for the time being. And when the time comes, then yes, I would leap to the next. I enjoyed the metaphor a great deal. Well written.
Absolutely. And it also hits on the idea of how each individual take on a particular piece can be as varied and wide as the next person down the line. Everybody takes what they can out of the vision itself. So that's a great thought as well. So nicely done, Luke. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, we're back to you.
Okay, well, now coming to the run. And this is called Lingering in Her Touch. By Lana. There you go. Everybody.
Lingering in her touch. She is iridescence, brilliance against a dark turquoise night studded with stars. Footprints on the sand, shimmering outlines paced with pride. As she walks the moonlight home, cold fire is her breath, fuzzy vapor that floats, an undulation torn by night breezes. Hermit crabs scuttle sideways at her feet, pincered worshippers drawn by a ghostly radiance, spinning and laughing, arms to the sky, she beckons me forward. My limbs fail the moment, cowed by this living moonstone, flame lingering in her touch. The moon lives within the lining of her skin, and she will consume me. End poem.
Great read, Laurent. Thank you very much. And Gene, how about you? What do you think?
I love this piece. I really did. First off, the quote, you know, as if you were on fire from within, the moon lives in the lining of your skin. I thought this is just an excellent take on that poem. And, you know, I have to say that right up front because it's a great line by Neruda to start with. But I thought it was beautifully penned piece, wonderful imagery throughout, excellent in response to the prompt. And I love so many of the lines. I thought it was just fabulous. She is iridescent, brilliant against the dark turquoise night studded with stars.
footprints on the sand, shimmering outlines, place the tide, pace the tide, as you walked the moonlight home, I thought that was great, walking the moonlight home. I thought that was just wonderful. Beautiful, beautiful imagery in this. Excellent job. So.
Thank you, Gene.
You're welcome.
Don't forget to mute yourself.
What I do?
Nothing.
What
I said, don't forget to mute yourself.
No, you're going to give me a dollar.
You got 25 minutes.
All right. There's more in this than just the moon and the woman, the convergence of two. Because you open up as sheer iridescent, brilliant against the dark turquoise night studded with stars. That's an easy look at what the moon conveys on a beautiful dark evening. Then you offer up her footprints in the sand, shimmering outlines pace the tide as she walks the moonlight home, and then back on the moon. Kind of a cold breath, fire in the breath, the gauzy vapor that floats, an undulation torn by night breezes. Now, I like that next stanza as a middle note. Hermit crabs scuttle sideways at her feet, pinched worshippers drawn by a ghostly radiance. There's a duality in that because there's night creatures will scuttle around and feed on the beach itself. Yet they will also scuttle around with the thought of an intruder being the woman. Spinning and laughing, again, that can walk both angles. And she beckons me forward, the idea of the moon itself and the woman. And the limbs failing at the moment, cowed by this living moonstone, flame lingering in her touch. You can actually walk this as the thought of the moon upon you yourself as well as a singularity, but it walks duality because you can actually fit a woman into this motif easily as a convergence of both. And I like that thought.
Bravo. Beautiful cover.
You're welcome. All right, Gene. Quick 2 minute back up to you.
Okie doke. The next piece I'm going to put up is called Master of Macabre by Sylvia. So, I have a little bit of that. Here we go.
So many changing faces, fiendish in mien, the world of horror through him was seen. A skilled master of guile and disguise, who could engender fear in shivering sighs. With every monster he convincingly portrayed, the most fearless would quake, so afraid. His sense of macabre was truly divine, the ultimate creation of Victor Frankenstein. With immense talent to make skin crawl, his popularity was never too poor. In the Hammer House, he was king of the realm. Others followed in his wake, with him at the helm. A unique inspiration to all in his field. In the annals of time, his immortality was sealed. From tombs of Egypt, in mummy's attire, so many great artists he was sure to inspire. Behind the Machiavellian mask of Fu Manchu, a terror and torture all seemed true. He left a lingering legacy of spine-chilling tales, to which today's horror genre significantly pales. A master of macabre, who reigned for many a year, one who really instilled the essence of fear.
Great read, Arcana, and great words there, Stellina. Thank you very much for SoundCloud. It is very much appreciated. And Laurent, why don't you kick us off?
Well, there was a time some years ago when books of horror were treated as fine literature. I mean, I think if you look at Frankenstein, if you look at Dracula, if you look at the works of H.P. Lovecraft, you've got some classic examples of excellent horror as literature, and it needs an interpreter. And in film, that interpreter was Boris Karloff, is one of the greats. And this particular poem pays homage to what he calls a skilled man, what Stellina calls a skilled master of guile and disguise, who could engender fear in shivering sighs. In the same way, the text of such a book at midnight in dim lights will send shivers of fear up your spine, so will Karloff, bringing to life some epic monsters. I love what he's done with this. And homage again to a master of macabre who reigned for many a year, one who really instilled the essence of fear. Excellent.
Absolutely. Him and Bela Lugosi ruled the 30s and 40s and into the 50s with their portrayal.
There are others. There were others.
Oh, yeah, yes, they were. But when it came to the Dracula and the...
Well, what's his name? Peter. And from Lord of the Rings there. He played the white wizard. Dark. What's his name?
Yeah. I know who you mean.
No. The original. The original white wizard who was then thrown down from the Tower of Orthanc was called... The actor...
Oh.
Peter, I can't remember, but he was another great horror actor. That's all.
Yes, there were. I remember the. Do you remember Nosferatu, the first one? I thought it was 1920.
Scared the shit out of me. I mean, black
that,
and white, and film the way it was like it was otherworldly.
Well, that was the thing with these movies. They were all done in black and white, and the note was the impression that the actors gave off within their skin, so to speak, as to what they could convey, and they did a great job with it.
And, you know, being in black and white, the use of light focused on the characters and with everything else in the background being dark really added to the atmosphere.
Yes. That's why when today when I see they do black and white with a touch of color, it walks back to that same angle, but that little touch of color kind of pops in the moment.
Schindler's List.
And set the nice tone. I like those there. But
little
then,
girl
I do
in the red
black
coat.
And white films. And there was a movie called Terminal with Margot Robbie they did in black and white with a little splash of color here and there, which was really good.
Well, just look at Frankenstein by Mel Brooks. I mean, he did that in black and white.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah,
wonderful
great
movie.
Film, great film.
And Gene, how about you? What do you think?
Oh, you know, this is just another
time. No, damn it.
No.
I know.
It's another fabulous piece by Stellina, really. That was top-notch, excellent as always. Congratulations both on the gold medal and the front page pick for this piece. I thought it was a fabulous write on the one and only Boris Karloff. you can't get much better than that. And as always, you know, Arcana did an excellent audio for this. I'm surprised Stellina didn't read it, but he does have that voice that kind of flows with it. So, well done, you guys. And Stellina, excellent write. Excellent write. Continue to get another poem. Okay. I'm coming back to you for this one, Rex. This is Grandfather Time by Big Daddy Love.
Grandfather Time by Big Daddy Love. grandfather, they call me, for I, apart time, I never fall marching onward. My arms like arching boughs of a tree. Grandfather, they call me, for I, apart time, I never fail marching onward. My arms like arching boughs of a tree. I have many gripping, groaning, growling green branches. Humanity's children choose cautious climbs throughout their lives. I favor none, rich or poor, or assertive or meek. Father Time, my children call me, for all must conform to my direction, pondering the lines my children will take, alternative dimensions. Time makes no mistakes. Boys walking towards manhood grasp greater cause. Girls grow to give birth. None of them ponder what time it is to pause eventually. My perspective then shifts from one hand to the other, seconds to minutes, leaves to branches of family trees, faces, lives blown like dust and wind's gentle breath, ancestral dispositions from father and mother. Years to decades to centuries I have known, sad wings of destiny's tornadoes have blown, life's time. Now, I'm a sundial, an ancient device to track while the sun, quote old but precise, then, even at night, by bright moon's reflection, a shadow tells all that time follows projection, keeping track of me through the course of their lives. I'm important to them, for death's appointment arrives for all. Who will remind me, for my pendulum slows, lo, a cold winter wind from the west, and grave sites will open if your hand slows, will stop. Eventually, life's time for all. We'll stop. And poem. All right, Gene. What do you think?
I thought this was a really nicely penned piece. I thought his thoughts were well expressed. I picked this here. My perspective then shifts from one hand to the other. Seconds, minutes, leaves to branches. A family trees, faces. Lives blown like dust and wind, gentle breath. Ancestral dispositions from father and mother. Years to decades to centuries, I have known. Sad wings of destiny, tornadoes have blown, life's time. That was a great stanza, and I like the way the poem progressed. Different transitions on the original concept, and I thought it was well done. This was a piece that he had written against one of Sylvia Plath's pieces called Mirror. And when I looked at it, I wasn't familiar with it, but it went from being a grandfather clock, and then he refers to father time, and then he goes on to, at the end it goes into now I am a sundial. So it goes into different stages, and I thought that was really intriguing and well done. So thank you, Big Daddy Love, for sharing. Much appreciated. And
thank
congratulations on the beautiful NFL paycheck. 500 states. Nope.
And Laurent, how about you?
Impressive piece. Grandfather, they call me. For I am a part of time, I think is what he meant. I'm not sure. But let's assume that's the case. And there he is, grandfather, by his children, because he never fails, always marching onward. My arms like the aching boughs of a tree. I have many gripping, groaning. He speaks of the family tree. He speaks of himself being the one who gives all direction, and then wondering the lines that his children will take, the alternative dimensions, et cetera, and where time is going to guide them, because time makes no mistakes. He describes them as boys walking towards manhood, grasp greater cause, they begin to realize what life is all about. But none of them at that time in their lives think about when the time is to pause. And obviously, I think that time is when they're older. And he speaks of his perspective shifting from one hand to the other, seconds to minutes, leaves the branches of family trees. Because from him, all things flow backwards and beyond him, his own ancestors. And now he casts himself as a sundial, an ancient device to track well the sun, quite old, but precise. But then realizing, of course, that we're all going to have to meet death at the appointed time. And he describes this pendulum as slowing as a cold winter wind from the west, and grave sites will open. If our hand slows, we'll stop. Eventually, life's time will almost stop. He realizes that that is the time for death. But as far as the personification of time through him, as those various things, personifying time, brilliant piece. Nice front page pick.
Absolutely. I'll walk that way with you, too, because I did like the thought grandfather, the idea of the grandfather clock, and then father time walking into the reality of how we perceive it. And then that the shift in perspective, a nice touch there. And then walking back to the ancient world, now the sundial and ancient devices, track well the sun, quite old but precise. And then the back end, again, we return to the grandfather clock. Who will rewind me? For my pendulum slows, low a cold winter wind from the west, and grave sites will open if your hand slows, will stop. Eventually, life's time for all will stop. Again, that note to how time ebbs away slowly, but it does quicken its pace near the back end of things, and then it kind of paints the notion of our internal clock, the heart, so to speak, eventually failing. Nicely done there, Big Daddy Love. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jean, we're back to you.
Well, I'm trying to see if I have anything that's short enough. And this one. And for my next magic trick, that's the way I feel every time I do this. Okay, this next piece is called Globe on the Sand by Nan 529. Okay, each grain of sand, a million lives is connected. Hope streams scattered on empty shore, sand dunes where lovers lay entwined, amongst straw green blades of withered grass. Within a crystal globe, mirroring images shine, a floating candy floss, fluffy white clouds. As your blue views, promising fantasies inside a glass ball, resting softly on golden sand, upside down reflected. Rhythmic endless waves reaching water's edge, seagulls glide, calling out echoing as they land. Breathe deeply, salty air, while sun rays warm the face. Walk along barefoot on soft ground, remembering in your heart this blessed day. And hope.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Laurent, why don't we start with you, please?
Sand grains are such a wonderful device to use to accomplish any number of poetic images. And this is a good one. Each grain of sand, a million lives have connected, hope streams scattered on empty shores. Within that crystal globe, mirroring images shine, a floating candy floss, puffy white clouds. It's a beautiful image. It speaks of the beach. It speaks of a million lives that are connected, scattered on the empty shore. It's a great metaphor for, you know, when you're in a place like that, and let's say there's absolutely nobody around, it seems empty, it seems deserted, yet throughout time, throughout history, these empty shores have seen activity. We have seen lovers laying entwined amongst straw green blades of withered glass. They have seen shipwrecks. They have seen tempests and storms and everything else within it. But she speaks of floating candy floss, fluffy white clouds. She takes the beauty of the ocean, the rhythmic endless waves reaching the water's edge. She brings in the seagull, the salty air, and walking barefoot on soft ground. And a day like that absolutely can be blessed. The great piece.
All right. Thank you, Rob. And Jean, how about you since you read it?
Yeah, I have to agree. I really enjoyed the imagery throughout this. You know, I think she really met the prompt on the globe itself, the image. But I liked her imagery. If she hadn't added in here, resting softly on golden sand, upside down, reflecting, if she hadn't done that, she could have pulled this whole poem off without anyone ever knowing there was an image involved because of the way that she wrote it. But I thought it was, I thought the imagery was great, and I really enjoyed the wording throughout. None was Laurent, the second stanza I really liked, within a crystal globe mirroring images, sign, floating candy floss, fluffy white clouds, azure blue seas, promising fantasies inside a glass ball. I just thought that was just really nicely done. There's you know, a few more lines in the top and a couple in the bottom, but I think that, you know, as I said, I think it was just a great job by Nan. So thanks for sharing, hon, as always.
I think that line you just mentioned was placed in there on purpose, resting soft in golden sand, upside down, reflecting. Considering what was in the first stanza and what she uses to finish out the last stanza, especially that last line, remembering in your heart this blessed day, the idea of that reflection upside down is no matter how topsy-turvy your day might be, remember this, because it'll never be another one like it moving forward or looking backwards. So the idea is enjoy that blissful day in your topsy-turvy world in the moment. Why? Because there's something you can gain out of that. And I think that was nicely juxtaposed there, man. So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. That's a great
question. All right,
June. Okay, well, that's it for the poetry. We don't have that much much time left. 3 minutes. Tonight, Once Upon a Time with Dexter and Pam. Tonight is Clowns, Jesters, and I want to say Freak Shows, but I'm not positive if that's correct. I don't want to miss
that. On this day in history, Gene did not mute.
Jesters, Clowns, and Sideshow Freaks.
You want that dollar.
That's right. I need that dollar.
Right.
Girls got to make a dollar somehow, right? But anyway, tonight, 12:30, that's the show. Tomorrow is, I think it's Stray Eyes and Dan with Bad Company. And that's followed by Selena and Arcana. Sunday, Rhythm and Rhyme with Rex, with Huey Lewis in the News. Or, yeah, right?
Yep. Yep.
Okay. And then we're back to Monday with Garden of Enlightenment with Lou Uwango, followed by Rex and the After Midnight Show. Rex, you're a kid all around on the weekend, don't you? Anyway, I want to thank everybody, you know, that hung out and listened. And thank you, Hope and Nuno, for hanging on the board. Thank you, fellas, for hanging with me. Rex, thanks for co-hosting with me. Thanks for the dollar. I'm watching for the mail. And,
I got a forever stamp for you.
Hey, we can do it again next week. It's double or nothing. Okay.
Ooh, tempting.
Just saying. You get a little interest on that dollar before you send it my way. Anyway, awesome show, everybody. Great poetry. We have some carryovers. I'll be putting them up on next Friday's board. So everyone, have a great night. Take care and have a wonderful weekend. Thanks.
Good night, everybody.
Thanks, Rick. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.